I have always respected people and news sources who publicly announced when they're wrong. As Jordan Harbinger said to James Altucher in a recent episode of James's show, if newspapers actually care about trust and the quest for truth, then they shouldn't bury their corrections in smaller parts of the newspaper. They should put them on the front page. Well, I care about those things. And I don't view this podcast as a list of separate little islands that I call episodes. To me, this is just one ongoing conversation. So when I screw up, I'm going to make bonus episodes. I'm going to make I was wrong episodes. And this is one of those because I was wrong about some things regarding Bitcoin and Amazon Web Services. My name is Chad Hall, and I've spent most of my life circling paragraphs, poking holes in stories, and taking apart things that I can't always put back together. Whether it's in books or true crime documentaries, conversations or trending topics, I find gaps that most people breeze past. So this is a place to take my questions and to try to understand them. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. Sometimes I miss something or I change my mind. This is my podcast. It matters, but it doesn't. I'm not surprised that I was wrong about Bitcoin. Sometimes when you read about Bitcoin, you feel like you're reading something in another language. And sometimes you think you understand it and you have it completely ass backwards. So one of the things that I said in the last episode, I said that Bitcoin, when the code of Bitcoin contains all of the previous transactions, that's not true. That's only in the blockchain. The Bitcoin itself is just an alphanumeric code, from what I could tell. I tried to actually see what it looked like. Like, let me see a sample code of what a Bitcoin looks like, but I couldn't find that. So as far as I can tell, it's just an alphanumeric code. But the blockchain does contain all the previous transactions. So that wasn't completely wrong. It was just only the blockchain that contains that. And on top of that, I also said that mining was just creating Bitcoin. That's not necessarily true. Mining is not creating new Bitcoin, but it technically does involve creating new Bitcoin. Bitcoin mining is essentially, it's using your processing power to create blocks. And blocks are groups of these new transactions. And each of these blocks contains what's referred to as a cryptographic hash of all of the previous blocks. What this means is essentially it's an algorithm of all of the previous blocks. It's, you know, it's not an actual written list. It's a coded algorithm of all of the past transactions and the new ones, the ones that you're grouping in this new block. And these blocks, all blocks are arranged chronologically. And the reason that they're arranged chronologically is something that Satoshi built in as kind of a protective mechanism. Because if you go back and let's say that there are 3,000 blocks, they're probably way, way more than that. But say there are only 3,000 and you're about to make 301, but you know, 3,001, and you want to go back and you want to falsify block number 2,500. You know, maybe you want to make those transactions to you or whatever. Well, if you go back and alter block 2,500, all 500 blocks after that become invalidated. That's why we call it a blockchain, because they're all connected chronologically. When you break one link, you don't only lose that link, you lose all of the links connected to it afterwards. So that's an important thing to understand. Also, this is kind of hard to understand. And I don't mean for you necessarily. I mean for me. This is going to be the best explanation I can get of this. Mining is a bit like a lottery. There's a guy named Bogdan Batog. I hope I said his name right. He wrote an article on Medium called Bitcoin Mining versus Lottery. And he says, Bitcoin mining at its core is a search for a solution to a math problem. So math problem, lottery. What's that mean? So miners are sitting there sometimes billions of times per minute trying to create new blocks. But because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people and groups trying to create new blocks, trying to mine these new blocks, everybody can't win. It's not a guarantee. So your computer is doing this process. And when it gets to the end of the process, if it gets the answer, the right answer, it gets the answer that's accepted by everybody else on the chain, then you win. You succeed at mining that block. And why do you want to mine the block? When you are successful at mining a block, you are granted the ability to mint new Bitcoin. I believe this is called something like a Coinbase. I think that's the term, or that's the name of the transaction that happens. It's a special kind of transaction to allow the minting of new Bitcoin. This process is where all Bitcoin come from. This is where all Bitcoin have ever come from this process of mining and being awarded the ability to mint new Bitcoin. But successful miners don't only get this ability to mint new Bitcoin. They also get the transaction fees for the transactions that are inside their block. Like if they were a credit card company and there were 15 transactions, they get all the money, the transaction money, you know, whatever that is, 2% transaction fee. They get all of that for the 15 transactions in their block. But here's the thing. I mentioned in the last episode that Satoshi, he built scarcity into the system because he understood that if he didn't build scarcity in, then as a currency, it would be worthless. So every 210,000 blocks that are created, that are mined, the reward for mining is cut in half. Right now, and as of May 11th, 2020, the amount for successfully mining a block is 6.25 Bitcoin per block. And after 210,000 blocks are created from the first one created on May 11, 2020, that price will cut in half. And then every time somebody successfully mines, they will be awarded the ability to mint only 3.125 Bitcoin, on and on until that keeps halving and halving. And then eventually the reward will be zero. And it will reach the limit that Satoshi set forth at the beginning of there only being 21 million Bitcoin ever. And they expect that people will reach that in about 2140. But that's not the end of it. Because remember, you don't only get the ability to mint new Bitcoin when you successfully mine a block. You also get the transaction fees. So when it gets to zero, people will be doing it just for transaction fees. And the reason you want people to keep mining and keep creating blocks, by the way, is because that's the blockchain, that's the ledger, that's what the whole system is built on. So in order to encourage people to use it, it's all circular. It's all working together. You need people to maintain the ledger. You need people to create the blocks. Okay, that's the basics of what I got wrong when it came to Bitcoin. Now let's talk about Amazon Web Service. Those are some more major points that I got wrong with Bitcoin. The Amazon stuff is more minor. But the reason I'm bringing it up here is because I learned something additional that adds a little bit to what we were talking about. Just to refresh your memory, and it was only a few days ago for some of you, what I basically said about Amazon Web Service was that it was an example of pulling resources rather than pushing resources out. So the first thing I got wrong, which is hilarious, is I kept saying Amazon A3. It's not called Amazon A3. It's called Amazon S3. I guess in my head, I was thinking A for Amazon. No, it's S3. So what I said about Amazon Web Services was that they don't allot you a specific amount, that they pull what you need when you need it. So when you need more storage, or when you need more bandwidth for more visitors, they pull it then. But what I didn't understand at the time was, how do you pay for that? If I'm not getting this 10 gigabytes allotted for me, then how am I paying for it? Because previously, that's how you paid for things. You say, I want 10, here's 10, and 10 costs you 40. Okay, here's 40. So the only way to do this is that you pay for what you use, which when you think about it, the idea of paying only for what you use, like some cell phone services, some of the smaller cell phone services do this. That's pull instead of push. Push is dictating the price and what you get for the price. Pull is saying, this is how much it costs per, I'm using air quotes here, per mileage. It's your decision how much you want to drive. That's pull. It makes it more affordable for people. This is also part of this idea of pull being revolutionary. But there's also something I learned in the process of looking that up that I think is also another example of how Amazon is using pull when it comes to S3. The storage levels are not just about amount of storage, you know, because actually it's not about it at all, because I just told you, you pay for what you use. But there are levels on the type of storage. And what I mean by the type of storage is, how quickly do you need access to the data that you're storing? There's 6 levels. I'm not going to tell you all 6. I'm just going to tell you that they start at standard and they go to Glacier Deep Archive, which is a cool name. Standard. This is what you would normally expect of storage. This is, the file is on my desktop. It's not literally on your desktop. Maybe it's a bad analogy. I'm trying to use computer storage as an analogy for computer storage. This is cloud storage that when you click on it, the file is there. You have it. This is your hot live files. You need it when you click on it. It's available 99.9% of the time. And it costs you 2 cents per gigabyte, which sounds pretty cheap. This is analogous to having a file right on your desktop. It's right when you need it. You click it. It's there. Now you have a bunch of levels, but at the other end of it, the opposite end, is Glacier Deep Archive, which, as you can imagine from the name Glacier Deep Archive, this is stuff you don't need instantly. This is stuff that you absolutely don't need instantly. You know you're never going to need it instantly. This is stuff that you can wait a minimum of 12 hours to access. And the price for this is $0.00099 per gigabyte. In other words, it's about 1/100th of a penny per gigabyte. And this is more analogous to saving something on an external drive, unplugging the drive from your computer, putting it in the closet, or putting it in the garage. Maybe once in the next 5 years, you're going to go, oh, where is that invoice from 1995? Oh, I got to go out to the garage and get it. There's a process to get it, then you have access to it. But those are the things you don't need instantly. You have stuff that you need to save, you need it backed up, but you're probably never going to access it. And if you have to, you can wait a day. It's not a big deal. This is also a great example of pull. So that's basically what I was wrong episode is basically about. I tell you where I was wrong. Those are corrections on Bitcoin and a little more clarification on Amazon S3, not A3, S3. And now you know. What can I say? I was wrong. Thanks for listening. And I hope I injected a little bit of juice into that extraordinary brain of yours. Be sure to subscribe to the show, share episodes, and go to itmattersbutitdoesn't.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter. I mean, if you like the podcast, you're going to love that. Every day I send out highlights exactly like the one in this episode. Each of them is a nugget, a note, a quote, or an idea for you to ponder. And the emails are short and easy to read in a quick minute, like a tweet. And I also like to send out book recommendations once a week. And after you sign up for that and you're still on my website, you can click support for a list of ways to support the show, including joining my Patreon. So go do it now. Go check out itmattersbutitdoesn't.com for all of that. The full episode archive going back to 2016, a link to my public notebook, and some other stuff. All right. I'll see you when I see you.